Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan. I have Mikey and John joining me to recap what can only be described as an extremely disappointing loss and really a one-sided football game against Virginia last Saturday. I've been racking my brain, but is it fair to say that we're the worst orange and blue team in college football? Ooh, I mean, back-to-back weeks, right?
I don't know. I mean, Syracuse has even been doing well. You got UTSA and Virginia both taking care of us. I don't really
There's
know.
There's got to be another one.
Boise State, are they good this year?
Yeah, they are. Like, Boise State and Syracuse are the only other ones that I can think of that we haven't played.
Maybe like UTEP? Aren't they orange and blue too? I don't know.
No, Minor Nation, I think, is a different color scheme. But point being, we might be the worst, yes.
Yeah, not the ideal start of the Brett Bielema era. Although, I will say, I mean, for me personally, looking back at my expectations, if you told us, you know, the first three games of the year that we were 1-2, I don't think people would be shocked. The only shocking part to me is that it was a win against Nebraska and a loss to UTSA and then a loss to Virginia. So 1-2 is not necessarily where you want to be, but I don't know that it's that far from our expectations if we flash back to 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think after coming out and getting that win against Nebraska, you know, let's be honest, not a lot of people, you know, thought we were going to win that one. And coming out, getting that win, you know, we played well that whole game, I thought. You know, I never felt like we were going to lose that one. It personally, for me, it set my expectations high for this season, but I should have known better, you know, just with being an Illini fan now. You can never set your expectations too high because, you know, it seems like years ago that we beat Nebraska, you know, and in reality, it was only 2 weeks ago. So, you know, a lot of season still left. But Dan, I think, you know, in your intro, when you said disappointing, I was trying to think of one word to wrap my head around last weekend. And the one that kept popping up was disappointing. You know, I just felt from the start, Virginia went 75 yards and like six plays for a touchdown and just it looked like there wasn't even a defense on the field. So just, you know, poor performance coming out, poor performance the rest of the game. And, you know, that's the good part about the game. You know, we got another one coming up this weekend, so hopefully we can turn it around.
Yeah, I think I would also, you know, disappointing is definitely a word that I would use to characterize that loss. But I think embarrassing is another one too, just because of the fact that one of the things that I really loved about the Nebraska win was that they came out after Brandon Peters, you know, was knocked out and, you know, they were kind of in flux for a little bit, but they responded well and got the win. And in this case, you know, you had guys, you know, not tackling, you had guys dropping balls left and right. You had, you know, penalties after the play or for unnecessary roughness or unsportsmanlike conduct that just you can't be having if you're trying to rebuild a program. And it's, you know, those are the things that can be corrected. Yeah, maybe Virginia beats you 9 times out of 10 just based on how the chess pieces match up. But at the same time, you just can't be putting yourself into more of a hole than you already were. I mean, in terms of how the game went itself, I think for the offense, you know, that first drive out of the half was great, but otherwise there wasn't really a whole lot else besides, you know, running the deuce spam play that really was super effective.
Good play, by the way.
It's a great play. Love that play. Keep running. It's amazing that the two most effective receivers on the team are converted quarterbacks, which I think tells us a lot about where the receiver room is. But yeah, and on defense, I mean, it just felt a lot like the past couple of Lovie Smith years where they were just getting everything, chunk plays over the middle. You know, you couldn't stop them. And that was a little disheartening. But at the same time, Dan, like you were saying, in terms of kind of expectations, you know, the Ryan Walters defense was always going to be super volatile. And that's something that at least I was expecting in terms of, you know, a game like this happening. Now, granted, I don't like it that it happened in back-to-back games against UTSA and Virginia, but hey, maybe at the same time, like UTSA goes out and wins the SWAC and Virginia is actually, I don't think they're going to challenge for the ACC, but maybe, you know, how people thought that North Carolina was going to be the challenger to Clemson, then maybe Virginia gives them some kind of challenge or something like that. So maybe we look back on these two non-con losses and the context is that, hey, maybe those teams are actually pretty good. And if you go take care of Maryland, then you can be like, hey, we're somehow 2-0 in Big Ten play. And this is kind of wild, but that's kind of my takeaway from the weekend.
It seems like every week we get off to these terrible starts. Like everyone's probably fumbling around to find ACC Network and it's already 14-0 by the time you get to the channel. So I know Brennan Armstrong's a pretty good quarterback, but it's hard to tell if Illinois just does a good job of making every quarterback look like a Heisman candidate or if, you know, we're just struggling to stop them.
Yeah. And their tight end, Jelani Woods, I think that's his name. He looked like, you know, Jimmy Graham out there. Like he was a man amongst boys and just dominated us all game long, starting, you know, with that first drive. So that's, you know, I felt like we've been burned a lot by tight ends in the past, you know, especially right over the middle. And Virginia knew that and they went to it and, you know, it worked for them. So hopefully that's something, you know, going forward, I'm hoping that we'll be able to clean up for sure.
It's almost like Rod Smith was in those offensive coaches' ears being just like, hey, I know exactly how to attack this defense. I did it in practice for years. I've seen it on all the game film. I know exactly just right behind the linebackers, you're going to live there all day. And that's, you know, and especially in the creative ways that they did it too. He's probably like, these guys, you know, they've been used to playing the same shell coverage for most of their careers. They're not going to understand how to react to motion or whatever. So I'm not saying this is all Rod Smith. I'm just saying it's funny how you see some of those elements pop up and you're like, oh yeah, they probably had the real advanced scouting report on all these individual players and what their deficiencies were.
Mikey, explain it to Dan. Everyone in the world knows that soft spot over the middle is the weakness of Illinois' defense. Why have we not adjusted, or what's going wrong that we can't stop those plays?
Wow, the hard-hitting questions right there. You know, it's tough. You know, with Lovey or Coach Smith, you know, he ran – I think he even said in his, you know, press conference with the Houston Texans where he's the defensive coordinator now, I think he even said, like, he never had the correct guys to run his system. Be one. Yeah. Just from an athleticism standpoint, you know, being able to cover the middle is a tough job to do, but that's why the guys in the NFL get paid millions of dollars to do it. But in terms of the team this year, you know, I do not have an answer for you. You know, if it were me, I would, you know, play man right over the tight end on every third down with a shell over the top. Safety covering, because every team seems to just attack the tight ends. And as we enter Big Ten play, it's only going to get worse because there's a lot of teams with a lot of good tight ends.
The thing I wonder is, like a more casual football fan, if the opposing offense knows that weakness is there, do they disguise their formation so that Illinois is not privy to what they're about to do? And then they just end up getting a guy to the position they want, you know, across the seam? Or are they still showing the same formations and stuff that other teams have shown and running the same exact plays?
Yeah, I mean, you know, by now, you know, the technology, everything is incredible. So after week one or after the first few weeks of the season, you generally know all the formations that the team has to run. And I think it's just not really disguising players in certain spots to get them to that spot on the field. They just know that, you know, they've seen it work from the weeks prior, so they're going to continue doing it until Illinois adjusts. And, you know, clearly the last 4 years, 5 years, we haven't adjusted to it. So it makes no sense for those teams, you know, not to call something. And I think that's another matchup issue, like we were talking about with the NFL. You know, maybe we don't have guys that can go play basketball and box out those big tight ends. So, you know, in the years to come, when, you know, Coach Bielema is able to bring in his own recruits, hopefully they can plug somebody in there that can really, really, you know, stop those tight ends and change our defense. And I don't even think it's the tight end. It is the tight ends, but it's also the receivers too. You know, I feel like every team we play, there's always a guy open right over the middle or right in the seam. And as a fan, it's tough to watch, you know, but down on the field, you know, those guys, they're under a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. It's easier said than done, but yeah, you know, hopefully in the weeks to come, we'll see some adjustments and maybe a few interceptions when the offense doesn't know that we're going to be covering those spots.
Yeah, and even to build on Mikey's point a little bit in terms of how they're getting broken down, it's not so much that like you get these tight ends that are tight to the line, you know, crossing linebackers' faces and just getting behind them. It's more so the route combinations that are used in terms of splitting a guy out, or like you were saying, Mikey, with the receivers, just getting it so that their route breaks just behind the linebackers. And because these guys are, I don't know if it's a combination of them not being used to getting depth, or just when they do get their depth, not being able to react quickly enough because they might not have the athleticism, but that soft spot behind there is something that, you know, is an issue, and they're going to have to recruit, you know, some guys with a little bit more athleticism. But at the same time, yeah, it is just one of those where they might not be used to those kind of combinations just coming in behind them, or the reaction times are just too slow. Because the first couple of weeks, I would have attributed it to the linebackers playing a little bit more up to contain the quarterbacks, because they were, I mean, all three have been running threats thus far, but in at least the stuff that I've watched back, you know, the guys are trying to get back and cover the middle of the field. It's just that they're reacting a little bit too late to routes that are crossing behind them, and they're feeling it, but not quite in time. And so that reaction is just catching them a little bit off guard. And that's, you know, these guys are college power five quarterbacks. Well, at least two of the three have been, so they're going to be able to hit those seam routes more often than not. That's why they're power five quarterbacks.
Our picks of the week, not the best week for the podcast.
Nope.
I had an injured Sidney Brown who got hurt in the first quarter, so my interception prediction did not come true. I know John had Tony Peterson, who wasn't exactly carving up the Virginia defense, although he had that one nice drive. But aside from that, it was a pretty stalled offense. And then Mikey had Casey Washington, who was subject to a case of the drops, let's call it. So all in all, not the best week for the podcast, but I think we were due for an off week.
Tough. Casey ruined my personal streak with semi being correct on my predictions. You know, maybe further on in the season, I'll give him a redemption game and pick him again and allow him to redeem himself, but he's going to have to prove it over the next few weeks to see if he's worthy enough to get that nomination from me.
Yeah, I'm kind of supremely frustrated with how this offense is operating. I think the defense, there's a lot more that you can excuse in terms of changing schemes and not having the horses to quite do that, in terms of going to that, like, you know, outside linebacker position, or having more of a nickel package in there. And because defenses are so reactionary, you need guys who fit those molds for their assignments. Whereas on offense, it's easier to tailor, and they have the talent too. I mean, I know we were just talking about, you know, the case of the drops that the wide receivers had, but I still don't understand how they're not getting Luke Ford and Daniel Barker more involved. Also, just the play sequencing is still so confused. I know that I'm going to sound like a broken record all year until it happens, but to consistently on second and short, or even third and short, not running play action when you know that a defense is going to be selling out, because you know it's a Brett Bielema team, that and they're going to be thinking run the entire way, and you've got these two, even three weapons, like, get Tip Ryman involved. I don't care. Just get someone involved in the play action game. Art Sikowski is not an immobile dude. He's not the greatest athlete, but he can get out there. He can make some plays with his legs. He can make, you know, a linebacker have to choose between him and Luke Ford, and then he dumps it. Like, there's so many things that you can do in terms of just getting little tweaks to the offense to make it that much more efficient. And hey, maybe with Brandon Peters coming back, we can touch on this more later in the week, but maybe with him coming back, there'll be some more changes, and the game plan will look more like week zero, where, you know, they came out and they were lighting it up. But I'm incredibly, you know, confused and frankly very disappointed, because they have the weapons to make it go, and then you can set up the run. See, that's the thing, is it's not like this thing where everything has to be a play action pass, because you can still set up the run, and then that helps your run game immensely. You wear down a defense, you have these 16 play drives, and you chew up all the clock. It's just counterintuitive to not use that option when you have it, and so that's why I am very sad that Tony Peterson couldn't come through and keep our streak rolling.
Let it all out, John.
Oh, I will. That's what the reaction shows.
How do you really feel?
Did you have any bright spots from the game? Maybe Kirby Joseph, maybe, I don't know, Chase Brown. Any positives you could point to, John?
Duspan being able to catch passes. Like, that contested, that's a tough catch. I mean, that's why he, you know, it's interesting because he had not all these offers, but he had some late push in his recruitment. And I'm seeing now that that was probably is more of an athlete, whereas Rod Smith was probably still selling him on being a quarterback of the future. But yeah, that's one of those where he's been a nice little find. Isaiah Williams, you know, is still super dynamic, which is why it's so frustrating that you can't get the ball. I'm just not going to go into another tangent, but it's just so frustrating because there's so many ways you can be creative to get these guys the ball in space. And the fact that they can't, it's just, I don't know. But there were bright spots, yes. And I'm hopeful that the biggest bright spot is just Brandon Peters coming back and lighting the world on fire.
Jake Hansen still good at punching balls away from running backs.
Mm-hmm. The Hansen hammer.
It's back.
It was back this weekend.
We knew that was coming. And maybe this is just one of those games you just put behind you. And I don't know. Do you, Mikey, is that one you want to look at the tape and learn from it? Or is that one you just burn and forget about?
See, I've gotten blown out and we come into Monday's meeting and the coaches are like, here's five plays. These are the only five plays we're going to watch and correct and instruct on. And then we're going to move forward. That was what we did a lot with Coach Cubitt. Just come in, see what we need to correct when we get blown out. Because when you're watching film and you're just every play seems to be a negative grade, it's tough, but you want to make sure you correct it. But at the same time with Coach Smith, we watched every damn play till the last second. Oh, nothing got by any games where we got blown out. And the one game I want to point to is when we played Ohio State in Columbus. We got beat like 46-14 or something. And it was, you know, they were up like 46-0 and we scored two touchdowns with like 5 minutes to go in the game. So they just blew us out and we watched every single play of that game and then went out for our walkthroughs. And there was probably 10 starters that were now backups and replaced with their backups. So there's a different way to go about it. And Coach Smith definitely, you know, if you messed up big time during a game, it was going to get corrected and you were probably going to get replaced. And then Coach Cubitt was more of the opposite to where if we had a really bad game, we were going to watch it for a little bit, forget about it, make sure it's corrected, but forget about it and then move on to the next week. So that answers your question, hopefully, Dan.
Well, should we put this one behind us or does John need to vent a little more before we sign off?
No, I'm going to bottle this emotion and save it for the enthusiasm when we go in Friday and absolutely dust Maryland. That's what we're going to do. I'm going to contain this. I'm going to try and find, because I'm note to all the listeners, I was puppy sitting this weekend, so having to take care of a 6-month-old devoted a lot of attention my entire weekend. So that is why the UTSA game film is on delay, and then we got to dive into the condensed version of the Virginia game because I'm not going to be able to rip the entire thing, which is very sad, but should allow me for me to catch up at some time in the near future.
All right. So you can check that out on our YouTube channel. Find us, as always, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram as well at The Field Pass. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon for a Maryland preview. Go Illini.